This is the ASC podcast brought to you by the Communications Committee of the Association for Surgical Education. Embracing the mission of excellence, innovation, and scholarship, the ASC is impacting surgical education globally.
Your podcast moderator, Mingli Wang. Thank you for joining us. I'm excited to introduce our guests today, Drs. Ken Lipshi and Jake Peshman. They are our chair and vice chair of the ASC Faculty Development Committee. Our topic today is faculty development on giving feedback. Without further ado, I'm going to let our guests introduce themselves. So, will the two of you tell us a little bit about yourself? What is your background? What educational roles do you have in your respective institutions?
Jake?
Sure. So I'm Jake Peshman, the vice chair of the Faculty Development Committee. I'm an assistant professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. I've been here for about 8 years on faculty now. I heard the term today, I guess, recovered clerkship director. I was a fourth-year clerkship director for a period of time. I am now also an associate program director for our general surgery residency program. I've been the program director here, our associate program director here for a couple of years, and was also an associate program director at another institution, Gunderson System in La Crosse. And the only other educational role, I guess, that I can see, I'm a trauma and critical care surgeon by specialty training. And so I'm the chair of our trauma education committee and help run a lot of our ACS verified trauma education programs like ATLS. I'm actually an ATLS educator and Adam and Asset and a lot of those courses too. So lots of great educational opportunities that we try and provide here and trying to keep my hat in most of them.
So I'm Ken Lipshi. I am the chief of surgery here at the Salisbury VA healthcare system, which encompasses Charlotte, Salisbury, Winston-Salem, and Kernersville. And I am also associate professor of surgery at Wake Forest. And my educational component is trying to work with our faculty just to assure that we have even though we're a separate entity from Wake, to assure that we have things that match the Wake process for development for trainees. I spent a lot of time really focusing on faculty development for not just my own faculty here, but also trying to work with the learning facilitators here to come up with things for supervisory training and other things and trying to come up with topics that I think will be really meaningful for our faculty. And I've been fortunate enough as the VA representative for the Committee on Trauma to really be engaged once again over the last 7-8 years teaching ATLS. And so I'm engaged in that course as well. And now I'm the chair for the Faculty Development Committee for the ASC.
Thanks. And I know both of you just got back from your ASE Faculty Development Committee. Meeting this afternoon that people are like faculty development on. So how do you think this topic of feedback comes in? Why is it timely? And what are the gaps that you've identified?
So let me start because I'm the less experienced person in this group and Jacob has a lot of information to provide. I would just sort of start with my transition into this committee and my milestones of learning what probably 3 years ago I knew nothing about. And, you know, at one point 3 years ago, Kevin Pei had asked me if I would take over the Faculty Development Committee as a vice chair. And so I immediately started to work with people across the country, work with Wake Forest faculty and try to see what exactly was missing from current faculty development. And I realized very quickly that there was both a lot of variation as to what was going on out there, who really had successful programs, what people wanted, but there was also a lot of similarity. I think we, you know, in our work in working with simulation committee, we did find that there was a need proposed by many for leadership and mentoring and coaching development. And with the DEI committee, I do believe there was a strong need for dealing with microaggression and bystander training. And I think those were very important. But one of the things that came up very consistently was some concerns with the upcoming EPAs and other scoring systems to really make sure that faculty fully understood it. There was some angst and concern by faculty. And then at the meeting, there were several papers that were presented that really raised some awareness amongst a lot of us looking at, you know, the residents' concern and their feeling that there's just a lack of objectivity in the performance feedback they're getting. And that there is some tie-in, as I understand it, between organizations who can look at, you know, between the residents who are going to clearly succeed and the residents who that just doesn't look like they are. There's this large group of residents who, you know, there's some that seem to be closer to the bottom who, with good feedback and good assessment and good evaluation, they also can succeed. But if they're in an institution where that's not possible, they end up being a straight line and they kind of narrowly succeed. And then their transition to practice is much rougher than somebody who had that feedback and really understand where they need to go. So it's that transition to practice piece that worried me. And we did send out a query across the APDS and the ASC back starting in March and through the meeting asking, you know, who had feedback and who had assessment pieces that were really helpful to pass on to their faculty. And, you know, it was amazing to most of us that there were some really good feedback, assessment, and other faculty development programs out there that just weren't well known to people. But across the board, most people just didn't have anything. So I think that was something that we felt probably was worthy of focusing on at our upcoming meeting, along with other things. So, you know, having said all that, Jake has taught me probably more about this subject over the last 6 months than I picked up on the 2.5 years prior to that. So I'm indebted to him, and I will let him really provide much more information from his very experienced standpoint and really focusing his research and looking at this internally. So I will pass the baton to him.
I appreciate that. You know, my role right now as an associate program director in our residency has been, you know, one of the lead on the EPA champion, the rollout, and, you know, the idea that trustable professional activities does really tie into the concept of feedback, despite the number of times you get some eye rolling when you use the word feedback 3 or 4 times in the same kind of talk or discussion. You know, my little more on my background, I have earned my master's degree from University of Wisconsin a couple of years ago in education psychology. And most of the classes I had taken were with teachers. You know, I think one of the hard challenges that we have as medical educators is we've all gone to undergrad and medical school, and we have a long history of education, but we don't get educated in how to be educators. And so that was something I have always been kind of interested in, helped me pursue this master's degree program. And, you know, when you take courses and everybody else in the course is like trained and has 4 or 8 years worth of degrees in how to be an educator, and I'm here of like, because I graduated medical school, I can now teach medical, you know, residents, I can teach students. There's a gap there. And so the idea of faculty development was something that was important to me. And I think feedback really ties into it. You know, the definition of feedback is that it's a process designed to help someone reach or meet a standard and is being done with the total purpose of helping improve their performance. or not the smoothest way of saying that, but you know, the concept is there. Like the idea of feedback is to help somebody improve. And I think that ties into surgery and what drives a lot of us as surgeons in that, you know, we are constantly trying to improve. You know, we want to make sure we're taking the best care of our patients. We want to make sure that we're providing, you know, best operations, best care, and constantly seeing that that ability to make yourself better is something that, you know, is I think inherent and really built into a lot of our training systems, but we don't always apply it to your effectiveness as an educator as well. And one of the things I learned, again, more so in working with all these like trained educators, is the students who are in school now, so middle school, high school, like they are being taught in a way that I think is different than, you know, me having graduated over 20 years ago now, not giving my exact age off. But, you know, expectations, I think, are set a lot more clearly, you know, and part of feedback is, why are you meeting the expectations? And if not, how can I get to meeting those expectations? I think a lot of, so I think as we're, you know, in these roles as educators and surgeons, the students, the residents that we're teaching, they've been trained in a way that's different than a lot of us were brought up and trained, that they expect to know what their expectations are. They expect to get feedback. They expect that process to happen. And that's what they're expecting of the people who are teaching them. And all of their teachers have been trained to do this until they reach where we are now as medical educators. And we were never taught how to do any of that. So a lot of that ties into the concept of how do you provide feedback? And then some of what I'm interested in, which is how do you provide feedback to the faculty to let faculty develop as educators?
So one common way of looking at feedback is to segment it into appreciation, coaching, and evaluation. I was wondering what you thought of this way of different types of feedback, and is it a useful way of looking feedback at looking at feedback, and what type of evaluation are we really talking about right now?
Yeah, I can start and then let Ken chime in as well. You know, I think a lot of it gets into some of the like really details and how you define things and how we probably use some terms interchangeably that we shouldn't, right? So going back to feedback. So feedback is ideally this two-way process that allows you to look at your observations of someone's performance as they work against a standard or try to meet a standard with the goal of helping them improve. And I think a lot of times that gets overlapped or the concept of feedback and assessment and evaluation get kind of changed. You know, assessment is that process of seeing where somebody is in attaining those standards based on their performance. And evaluation is really the end in that developing a judgment, you know, on based on their performance using whatever assessment technique you do. And I think some of those subtle differences that are built into the concept is why you get a lot of learner dissatisfaction with feedback, is because they get plenty of evaluations, but they don't always get that component of how can I get better the next time. The expectation is, you know, you didn't meet the standard, but I didn't tell you exactly what the standard is. How can I get there? And I think going into the, you know, different types of feedback, you know, the appreciation is great. Everybody needs part of that. It falls into some of the different models of the, you know, feedback sandwiches, with some terminology or verbiage for feedback sandwich that I'm not going to say on the podcast without knowing that you can bleep me. But, you know, you want to balance some of the positive points with some of the areas for improvement. And I think a lot of people know those concepts, but really how to put them into work can be a challenge. And I think a lot of that, if you really go back to it, it's because the standards are not met. Saying somebody did a really good job is appreciative, and saying thank you, that makes them feel good, but it doesn't necessarily make them better because they don't know what aspects of what they did were good necessarily. You know, the the idea of coaching, I think, is really kind of where I'm excited about. And like, if I decide to try and earn some more letters after my name, is probably what I would go after next, is look into, you know, some of these professional coaching, because they're full on professions on how do you coach somebody. And I think the idea on coaching is probably where education is going to need to go. Personally, you know, that's my personal opinion. Put in whatever disclaimer we need, that I do not speak for the ACS or ASC or ATLS or any of the other opportunities I get to teach. But, you know, the idea of coaching is really a one-on-one opportunity to work with and help somebody work on their performance improvement, and having that opportunity to have that back and forth with somebody is really can be helpful. And really, you know, there are lots of benefits in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, we see more of our leaders in medicine who have professional coaches, you know, to help them in their leadership roles. And there's no reason we couldn't look at coaching in terms of how I provide feedback to a resident and looking myself as more of a coach and how I get them better, and even getting coaching myself from, you know, more senior faculty or vice chair of education roles on how I can be a better educator and do that. Because again, none of this, it's all expected of us with very little training. I mean, no one would expect us to walk into the operating room and know how to do an operation on their first day. We don't expect that of our interns, but me on my first day as faculty, I'm expected to teach my intern how to do that operation. What, you know, despite trying to include that with teach assist cases requirement for the ECG and including it in residency training, you know, none of that is really developed in a way where we have these formalized programs on how to do this. And coaching is probably going to be one of the ways that we can fill in some of those gaps and maybe not get the same eye roll about using the word feedback again and again and again.
Well, Jacob, you did a really good job there. So, and from my perspective, I think that, you know, I see the repercussions of poor feedback when it's given, because, you know, in my role as chief of surgery, I see a lot of challenging, where people challenge their evaluation. And it is really difficult for me then to explain to the employee why their evaluation is exactly where it is when I go and look at the process that's handed to the employee. And then when I talk to the person that provided that evaluation, there is just a tremendous amount of thought and, you know, fluctuations as to why that person did or did not meet that. That's not actually ever written into their evaluation. And yet there's plenty of room to provide that. So I spend a lot of time, at least 2 or 3 times a year, working with my faculty on, you know, the section chiefs, on looking at and trying to explain to them why they already had a process in place and could have verbalized and written true summative feedback. And when I discussed with them, they described true formative feedback as things are moving along and corrective action. But none of that is actually ever documented in any way, shape, or form. So that's where I spend a lot of my time daily, just trying to reinforce the need to take what you're thinking. You understand the concept, but you have to really summarize it in a way that the person you're performing the feedback on really has to understand that, and create a mental grade between, you know, 1 star and 5 stars. You know, where do I range, and how I get to 5 stars if I'm only here at 1 star. And it's a constant challenge. And I'll be honest, I definitely don't think that the way that I'm doing this has achieved anything, because I haven't really seen much change at all in how my staff are performing their feedback. And I have the same staff for probably 5 years now. And I've decided that it must be me. I must not be providing them feedback on how to give feedback. And I've got to learn this process, because what I'm doing is not working. And we have a lot of challenging situations that come up with individuals or groups that just start off with that one thing. And if we had just fixed that, we probably wouldn't have gone on to other situations that turned out to be dissatisfaction. And then it ended up being, you know, things that disrupt the flow of our organization and that particular section. And it probably could have been avoided by just telling people, you know, you really need to improve. Here's how you're going to do it. And we just, we're not there. And that's my fault.
Yeah, like what both of you said, like Jake said, you know, it's a two-way street. So there's a person that's on the other side receiving this feedback, and this like being able to receive this feedback sits kind of at the intersection of our drive to learn and our longing to belong and be accepted. So as someone who is the associate program director, the chief of surgery, where you're really the person giving feedback, you know, for someone wanting to be better at doing the feedback that's really going to be effective and constructive and help the person along, what are your suggestions for steps that one can take to get better at giving feedback?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think there are different components to that, because you have to determine like what's better at getting feedback. Like ultimately, the person who determines if it was good feedback or not is the person who's getting it from you. And so, you know, a lot of this goes back to having those expectations set so that that person knows what the standard is that they're trying to meet. And then it really makes it a more fruitful conversation in terms of why they did or did not meet that. But also kind of understanding where they're coming from it, and starting with some of those kind of basic, how do you think, you know, and there's lots of ways to do it. There's lots of resources out there. There's lots of things that have been published. And I think if there was a perfect answer, it wouldn't even be a question anymore, because that would just be the way. I know, Nell Maloney Patel, who's the immediate past chair of this committee, you know, has published on some of this too. And she has the Michael method, you know, where you kind of ask them how they think they did. And then you stop and say, I'm going to give you some feedback. And and then you proceed to give them some of the positive comments, some of the opportunities for like to correct the areas for improvement, and then an action plan. It's really, you know, simple. And they published on that concept. I mean, it falls into a lot of these other Pendleton models and other things for feedback, you know, but I think the basic idea all comes back to, you need to have that conversation. You need to assess where your learner is coming from to make sure that the feedback you're giving them is going to be something that is meaningful and going to be internalized. And they have to know it's feedback. And I would say that's, you know, the idea of saying, I am about to give you feedback, generates a ton of eye rolls. Because as you know, we all get feedback, you know, I mean, you get feedback every day, you know, and how, you know, there's different types, you know, there's the verbal cues, there's the nonverbal cues. But if you really want to get to that definite feedback of like, how can I improve? Like, it needs to be part of that conversation. You know, the eye roll when you didn't do something correctly is really more of an evaluation of you than it is actually providing you feedback. And I think, again, kind of going back to that, like the learners that we have now, like that, you know, this is how they've been. It's not an unreasonable expectation to be getting feedback. And sometimes hearing it that way is just the way to make it most clear on that feedback. And even if that's not the way I got feedback when I was a resident, or Ken got feedback when he was a resident, like that's the way we probably should be giving feedback now, because it tends to work. And it's kind of hard to fight that. So, you know, the other is all the different apps and systems like that. I think, you know, the new EPA app for the surgical residents, especially, you know, we're trying to figure out if that's a feedback mechanism. I mean, part of the idea is that you're doing, you know, these micro assessments of their performance, which is a formative, you know, like formative experience, and it's designed to give feedback with the verbal component to it. You know, and we'll see, it's probably better than what a lot of people are getting now. And so it's going to be an improvement, especially for specific cases or presentations or seeing consults and all the different 18 EPAs that our residents are going to be assessed going forward. But with you truly getting to like the goal of feedback of being this two-way conversation and action plan, you know, me dictating that feedback to them, is only part of the component, because you don't get that input of a learner and you don't see what your end users' takeaway are. Because if I think these were the points for them to take away and they don't think those were the points to take away, you know, them internalizing that isn't going to be as effective, you know, form of communication. I think it's probably the big picture of all of this is it's actually you just have to stop and talk to somebody is ultimately what's going to make your feedback most effective.
So, Ken, I know that you are a supervisor of supervisors. So teaching faculty that are practicing in all these different environments and maybe different generational gaps and different practice environments they're working in, whether it's VA, academic, private, you know, what are some specific advice on what to do where you're at?
Well, I can say from my standpoint that the best thing that I can say is don't generalize anything. And you have to be very cautious about being very dogmatic on how you do things with variable staff. And I think I've even noticed within discussions within our own intern population where everybody wants to just kind of lump them all as into, you know, a very specific category of learners, even within them, their expectations for some things such as feedback can be variable. And I think it would be impossible unless you are having this face-to-face feedback with them and really reading the room to give them some sort of summated feedback. You have to have that formative feedback as you're going along and kind of reading their face and understanding what it is they're hearing. If you just think that you're going to be able to rubber stamp how everything is done, I think you're going to find that you're going to be mistaken. And that is one thing I'm working on with the interns now and trying to come up with a better process for how we do our little couch discussions, as opposed to really thinking that we should just fixate it with a very certain subset of categories and y'all pick one of these. I think I've learned the hard way that that really doesn't work. And you really have to talk to them as they're coming on board to say, hey, you know, what do you think about this concept? What should we talk about so I can be prepared? Why don't we, you know, discuss this thing? And I think that my hypothesis is that is going to lead to a better satisfaction in the end, as opposed to saying, well, this is what we're going to discuss and you rank this and I'm going to rank you 1 to 5, how you're doing. And it's not even what they want to talk about. So I've learned the hard way that you really can't generalize these things and you really have to adapt and change depending on who it is you're evaluating. I mean, at the end of the day, you still have to do your summative feedback. You have to provide the written feedback and those are pretty much standardized, but how you get there and how you get that information on there doesn't have to be the same for everybody. That's the only lesson I think that I had to pass on. And I'm still learning a lot from Jacob.
All right, the hour is kind of getting late, so I'm going to kind of wrap it up. So benefits of feedback, you know, we want to help individuals grow and improve. And that's how we get to better care, better operations, and to self-actualize and be our best selves. Some of the main takeaways I got out of this is, you know, how can we do this better? You know, one is, you know, stop and don't generalize. Listen to the person that's across from you and set and align expectations early. Be very specific. And have I missed anything else, Jake or Ken?
No, I mean, I think you're hitting the point. Like I said, it's when we develop the one perfect way of doing that, like I said, it'll just be the way, but we're not there yet. And a lot of it's going to be so individualized. You just have to focus on the basics. And the real first start of it is just doing it.
Yeah, I predict that there won't be a perfect way. I think that, you know, it'll be perfect for a time being, but then it'll continue to change just like everything else. I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, my feedback when I was rotating in the Fondren Brown building at at Methodist Hospital as a Baylor intern was, you know, I got to do, if I was doing a really good job and everybody was happy, I got to do more and more during a case, and, you know, I was trusted more. And if I did a bad job, I got screamed at, and I got, you know, I found myself not being able to do much of the case. And I think those days have definitely changed. And like Jacob said, the expectation is we need the expectations. We need a rubric on how you're grading me. You know, I need to know exactly what I'm being measured on so I can know exactly where I fall. And I'm going to test you on that. And so that's where we are. How it's going to be in 10 years, it may not be anything like this. I mean, I'm talking to people who can't even communicate with their kids anymore. So, because they don't speak the same language. So at least we'll be able to speak the same language with the current trainees. In 10 years, we may not be able to.
I don't know. I'm impressed every day by our, you know, like the interns that come in. By far the residents we have here at MCW, every class, they are smarter than I ever was. They work harder than I ever did. And not only that, they're begging for this, not beg, but they're asking for this feedback because they want to continue to get better. And I mean, that's just the epitome of what you look for in surgical residents. And I am fortunate to get to work with and train so many residents that are just like that. You know, that I think it puts it back on me to say, how can I be better and how can I do this better? Cause I owe it to them because they work hard. They take great care of our patients. And they want to be great surgeons, and I need to help them get there. And I think that that's the best way to internalize it is, you know, why are we all doing this? And that's to take the best care of patients, train the best surgeons we can. And, you know, it's feedback is just part of that. It's part of helping somebody grow. And if you want to call it feedback or coaching, there's going to be a lot of ways we're going to do it in the next decade or more.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the ASC podcast. We hope that you'll join us on the next one. Thank you.
And that wraps up another edition of the ASC podcast brought to you by the Communications Committee of the Association for Surgical Education. You can check out many great resources on the ASC website at www.surgicaleducation.com. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast series where we discuss pressing issues in surgical education. We invite you to join the ASC and get involved, and wish you much success in your pursuit of surgical education excellence.